B-Pod Studios.
What's up? This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Mike's teams play, they're sound fundamentally. You got to go out there and play well to beat them. You know, they don't beat themselves. They don't, you know, make mistakes that stop themselves. You got to go out there and play 60 minutes of good football. And that's really hard. I think every time we've played them, I've always felt like, you know, they had a really good game plan. They had a really good plan of attack. They made it hard on us and they were hard to defend.
You should feel good about that as a Patriots fan, because there's no way Bill Belichick believes that about Mike McCarthy and the Dallas Cowboys. Because the red flag surrounding that team is their stupidity and their dopey head coach. So for him to be talking up Mike McCarthy like that, feel good about it, because maybe he's got something up his sleeve. I will say, and it's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports. I'm going to touch on the Patriots here with this big game against the Cowboys tomorrow. We'll continue to take your calls on the Red Sox at 617-779-0985. The way that Dak Prescott is playing, he's a top five MVP candidate, even if you just watch clips. That's all you need to see. I remember seeing him week one down at Raymond James Stadium against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Chris. and the whole night, I'm like, well, he was the better quarterback. You know, I'll be honest.
He was.
And fair. He was the better of the two quarterbacks that night. Yeah, you see, I can be objective about Tom Brady. And I remember thinking, like, holy crap, not only is this guy back, like, I've never even seen him play at this kind of level. And he has continued that through the first month of the season. You got weapons all over the place, guys like CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper, the tight end, who I think is good.
Dalton Schultz.
Yeah, so, you know, like, yeah, like, they can, what they're doing offensively is not an anomaly. Like, there's no joke there. But, I don't know, like, our whole lives, especially over the last, like, 15, 20 years or so, no one trips up the Cowboys like the stupid Dallas Cowboys.
It's
so if
true.
They came in here tomorrow and laid an egg, I'm not going to be surprised.
I think this is a great chance for the Patriots to reorient their season and have a three-game winning streak. Obviously, they pull out the win against Houston last week. If you can sort of do the Texas two-step here and beat Dallas at home, you have the Jets next week. You know, that sort of changes the entire complexion of your season. You're coming in at 2-3. You could walk out of this little stretch with a winning record before you go to L.A. to meet Justin Herbert and the Chargers. They need this game to be this year's version of the Baltimore game. There's no question that Dallas has more talent than they do and that Dallas is a better team on paper. Same situation last year when Baltimore came in here. They have to pull out all the stops, have a great game plan against a very good quarterback, and find a way to get the win. That's what needs to happen here tomorrow. And I also think this needs to be, you know, I said this yesterday on Felger and Maz, when I wasn't assaulting you all with facts, I think this could be the breakout game for Mac Jones. You know, the Cowboys pass defense, yes, they lead the NFL in interceptions, but that scheme is susceptible to giving up a lot of yards. I think Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick know how to attack that scheme. Mac is an accurate quarterback, which is important against that type of scheme. Trayvon Diggs is banged up. DeMonte Casey is banged up. So I think you could have some guys playing in the secondary who maybe aren't used to playing with each other for Dallas. This could be the game that Mac gets over 300 yards or throws three touchdown passes or does both of those things in the same game. You know, a la sort of Davis Mills last week against a very good Patriots defense.
Do you think the coaching staff is willing to do that, that they're finally ready to kind of take the shackles off of Mac Jones? Because I'll point to some series last week, Chris, that I don't get it at this point. And so, you know, and that Houston team, too, that they struggled the way that they did. You know, my fear is, and just in terms of being able to talk about them and for people to be pumped up about them and for all the changes that they've made this offseason, all the money that they've spent, that they maybe just kind of stink because, like, they – That was real bad last week.
But yeah, that was real bad.
But I also think that they're kind of complicit in the way that they've looked, at least offensively, because I remember there was one series in the third quarter that just drove me insane. Again, they drive down to the red zone, and then it's three straight screen passes. And I remember it was like 3rd and 12, and it was just like one of these dumb little dump-off plays. And it's like, let the kid throw into the end zone. You see that he's capable of doing it with that touchdown to Hunter Henry and that back.
It was a great throw. Yeah, it was one of his best throws of the day.
So do you think that they finally have maybe learned their lesson, McDaniels, Belichick?
I mean, I don't know. I've sort of not really been on the very big on the they're like holding him back, you know, situation.
So the kid's gun shy then, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah, I think he is. Now, look, last week I think was different, and I think last week was different in terms of the play calling. I think you have a point there on last week. Part of that, I think, is because by his own admission, he put the ball in jeopardy. He threw a pick, and I went back and looked at it. There were at least, you know, four other times where guys are getting their hands on the ball, and that's never a good thing when the defense does that. Even if they don't catch it, they could tip it. And there were basically at least two other plays that really should have been interceptions. One, Justin Reed undercut his own guy, Lonnie Johnson. That should have been a clear pick. And then Justin Reed dropped one that would have been negated anyway by the roughing the passer call that they got on 3rd and 18 on the game-winning drive. But when you look at what they've done with Mac Jones, I mean, here are the passing attempts that he's had. 39 in the opener, 51 against New Orleans, and I know they were down in that game, 40 against Tampa. He had 30 last week. I mean, they're letting him throw the ball. And I gave this stat yesterday. He's dead last in the NFL of anyone who's attempted more than five passes that have traveled 21 yards or more in the air. He's 4 of 17 on those throws, no touchdowns, one interception, 26.3% completion rate. So I'm not sure how comfortable he is sort of trying to thread the needle or push it downfield. I think he said something really interesting this week that I thought was good and that I think can maybe foreshadow him having a big game on Sunday. He said, you know, you have to go out there and play, and you can't be a stick figure. At the end of the day, you just can't go out there and be a stick figure. You have to go out there and just react and play how you know how to play.
I think it was a stick figure and stuff, by the way, so it was the actual
was quote. It?
Yeah.
Okay.
but
I think he's just trying so hard to do everything, like, by the book, that and he's so afraid to make a mistake that, you know, just cut it loose and be the Alabama Mac Jones. Every once in a while, man, just cut it loose. I think he's so worried about making mistakes and doing it exactly the way it's prescribed by Josh McDaniels that, you know, I thought that was a good way of him putting it. Sometimes I feel like he plays paint-by-numbers quarterback and just be you and cut it loose.
We'll get more into this Mac Jones thing because, boy, I know you have gone back and forth with many people from Twitter people to Greg Bedard and so on and so forth this past week. It's been,
hey, man,
boy, this Jack Jones thing, the people hate hearing
it. Hey, they do. Hey, I'm just going to say this on it, and this is what I'll say for this before we get to it later. I don't take any joy in any of the numbers I gave you. They're just straight up numbers. But my big takeaway on this is if you're going to have the Springfield monorail runaway hype train with no brakes now, when he's playing well, and look, he's not the issue with the offense. He's playing well. But if you're going to do it now, when it's 2-3 and five touchdowns and five interceptions and wins over two teams with a combined 2-8 record, then if he goes out tomorrow and has the game Davis Mills had last week, well, what are you going to say then? Like, you're literally leaving no room for praise. If you're going to praise him at this level now with the 26th ranked offense in the NFL, what do you do when he goes and plays like Justin Herbert? Are you going to say he's better than Joe Montana?
Oh, the people will explode. They won't know.
But that's what I'm saying. I just feel like there's no perspective on it. I'm not asking you to rip him because he doesn't deserve that. But I'm saying if you're talking about him now like he's a franchise quarterback or projects as a franchise quarterback or could be elite or how dare you compare him to Kirk Cousins, well, what do you do when he actually goes out there and lights it up? Do you say, like, he's the greatest of all time? He's the GOAT? Do you say he's Brady 2.0? Do you say you want to put him in? You're not leaving any room for sensible praise or analysis if you're going over the top now, which I feel like a lot of people are.
But as far as tomorrow goes,
yes,
they win this game. You think, because I feel this way, it could be a real turnaround, season-saving type of win for them. And as ugly as last week was, that was a huge win for them.
Had to get a win.
Playoff hopes, because Cincinnati, Cleveland, Denver, Vegas, they're the four wild card teams ahead of the Patriots, and all four of them lost. And they also pick up another game on Kansas City, who now has the same record as the Patriots. So as gross as that was last week, and it was gross, huge. So if they win tomorrow, they pull this off. Again,
you get
the Jets at home the following week. Chargers. But for now, I think if they pull this off, you can feel pretty good about this team.
I totally agree with you. I could not agree more with you at that point. I mean, I think this is sort of a pivot point game for the Patriots, especially because, and I know this was talked about all week long, having been down there, it's shocking to look at and see they haven't won at home yet. They're 0-3 at home. You know, you have to protect your house. You have to defend your house. You know, Gillette was one of the great home field advantages in all of the NFL. Do you know they haven't had a losing record at home since 2000, which was Belichick's first year? They went 3-5.
Wow.
It's been that long since they finished the season with a losing record at home.
So, I mean, that's stuff from, like, the bad old days.
I know. I mean, so imagine 0-4 start at home. You can't have that.
Jimmy and Saugus on tomorrow's game. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah. Hey, guys. This is Jimmy from Saugus, but yes. Chris, I'm from Lynn originally, so much respect. Great show. I'm a lifelong Cowboys fan, but I want to give my 2 cents on the game.
Okay.
Personally, I think the Patriots have a great chance to win the game because I think they're in the position with the Cowboys coming off 3 home games in a row, with the bye looking up. They might be a little complacent, but if there's a weak link in the Cowboys' offensive line, it's the center. So if I were the Patriots, I would attack the middle to put some pressure on Prescott. But I'm telling you right now, Murray, this is not the same Cowboys team. Prescott is an amazing leader, and he's got this team rolling. So I'm looking forward to a great game.
Oh, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jim.
They look good. They look really, really good. But then again, they looked really good in 07. What was the other year? Was it 11? Like, there's been a few of these, like, oh, the Cowboys, they're the class of the NFC, and they find a way to crap themselves or screw something up. But they do look really good right now. And believe me, as a Brady Bobo and Brady super fan, let us not forget, at the end of that first game of the season, Dak Prescott said to Tom Brady, we'll see you guys again.
We'll see you guys again.
And I don't feel great about that because I do think the Cowboys would be one of those teams that could knock off Tampa. All right, let's get more insight on tomorrow's game and the Patriots and their standing as they get ready for the Dallas Cowboys. We'll talk to Alex Barth. Alex Barth. Alex Barth. Next here on Casper and Murray.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
.com. Chris Gasper. Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, well, all those different things that the offense can do or use to gain some kind of an advantage. And so when you consider from a game planning standpoint what your options are and how you can gain an advantage by doing a variety of things, what the biggest advantage is or what you're most comfortable with or, you know, however that unfolds, that's really the decision you make is how do we gain an advantage? Is it tempo? Is it motion? Is it a certain personnel group? Is it a certain formation? Whatever it is.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick ahead of tomorrow's big game for the Patriots as they host the Dallas Cowboys. 4:25 kickoff. Catch it here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Gasper and Murray, and to get more insight on tomorrow's game, joining us here in the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, Alex Barth of 98.5thesportshub.com. Always check out his Patriots coverage at 98.5thesportshub.com. What's up, Alex?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
Always a
good,
pleasure.
Alex.
So I saw, you know, J.C. Jackson, you know, look, all the players talk ahead of the game, and you know, many of them do. J.C. Jackson said the Patriots secondary can match with any receivers in the NFL, Alex. They're certainly going to have their work cut up for them tomorrow with CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper. I'll even throw in the tight end Dalton Schultz.
Cedric Wilson.
Yeah, it's a lot of talk. Do you think that they can actually back that up, especially with the way that Dak Prescott and the Cowboys offense is rolling right now?
I think they can, relatively speaking. And I think it's important J.C. Jackson said that because as Bill Belichick talked about this week, cornerback is a confidence position as much as anything else. And they're not going to back down. I think that mentality comes from, you know, when Stephon Gilmore was here. Can they stick with them? Like, they're not going to hold Dak to 150 passing yards or anything like that. But I think they could do something similar to what we saw them do against Tampa, where they're able to contain them enough that they can kind of force the offense to be a little more one-dimensional and keep the Patriots in the game. So that, you know, to me, that's sticking with them. That's covering them in this game.
Alex, what do you fear more here? Is it the Dallas passing game, which has obviously been prolific with Dak, who's second in the league in completion percentage, or is it that rushing game with Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard that has gone over 200 yards in each of the last two games?
So I think, like, as a whole, if I'm just looking at the Dallas Cowboys, I'm more afraid of the run. But if I have to pick my poison in this game with the Patriots on the field, I'm putting more emphasis towards stopping the pass and maybe putting less resources towards stopping the run, because I just, the way the Patriots roster is built, they spent all this money up front in the offseason. They go out, they add Jamie Collins, they promote Giovanni Talai to the roster. And then on the back end, Jalen Mills has been hurt. Kyle Duggar's been hurt. I just think you need that extra focus on stopping the pass in this game, even if that rushing attack is maybe a little bit more scary.
Alex, it feels like, you know, when the offense has rolled at times for the Patriots, it's when both tight ends are involved. You know, the Cowboys at linebacker kind of thin right now. Do you see them, you know, utilizing the tight ends a little bit more to attack Dallas tomorrow?
I definitely think they should. I remember saying this to you guys before the Bucs game that, you know, they hadn't really used them up to that point, and the Bucs had struggled against tight ends, and it was all right. It's kind of now or never. This is a similar situation where Dallas defensively has struggled to cover tight ends. Like you said, they'll be without some of those linebackers. Yeah, I think they absolutely need to attack through the tight ends, run the offense through the tight ends again. Hunter Henry, everybody down there has been saying Jonnu Smith is due for a breakout week. So this would kind of be a good week for him to break out. This is an opponent where he could, in theory, have a big game. Obviously, the situations have to present themselves. They have to give him the opportunities. But, yeah, I think it should be a huge game for the tight ends. The Patriots don't win this without a big game from at least one of the tight ends.
You know, Dallas obviously has a top five rushing defense statistically in the NFL. I think one of the ways you can take pressure off of Mac Jones would be to be able to run the football. And he really has been outstanding in play action this year, completing 77% of his passes. And that was clearly something they found against Houston. So where do you feel like the Patriots' run game fits into this game plan?
I mean, early on, I think you try it. I think you have to try it. But with Dallas's offense, you may not have that luxury. And I heard you guys on the last segment kind of talking about how many times Mac Jones has thrown the ball the last couple of weeks. It feels like it's almost sort of been by necessity. It doesn't feel like that's their game plan. It just feels like that's what they have to do because they have nothing with the run. If they fall into that this week, I think there's a good chance they fall into that this week. So you could see that number high again. If they have some sort of running game, it would be a huge help. Like you said, Dallas, you know, it's not something they're used to having to focus extra on to defend. So you kind of take some resources away. But with J.J. Taylor banged up, Damian Harris banged up, they're not going to have Shaq Mason. It's just based on what we've seen so far, it's hard to see tomorrow as the game that they suddenly figure out how to run the ball.
Unless it's the Ramondre Stevenson game.
That's fair. I think if any back is going to have a day tomorrow, it's him. He's basically the only healthy back, and he's shown the flashes. He's shown the potential. I still like Ramondre Stevenson. Like, I still like that they drafted him. I think he has upside. It's just he's clearly still a little raw. We'll see what he kind of learned those weeks where he was inactive because he didn't play a ton last week. I think that's a really good point. I know you were kind of saying that tongue-in-cheek, but if they are going to run the ball, it feels like it's got to be with Ramondre Stevenson.
No, I mean, it wasn't tongue-in-cheek. I actually like Ramondre Stevenson quite a bit, and I liked what I saw last week, and I'd like to see him involved more, and you never know when he can break. I think he has a great natural ability to run the football. You know, my sort of concern/criticism in the past with the Patriots when they get these running backs is I feel like sometimes they program them so much not to take any negative runs that they have guys who are thinking instead of just reacting, and running back is a reaction position. So hopefully he can get a little bit more back in the groove after having the manacles taken off him and being able to play last week. So no, that was not tongue-in-cheek. I mean, I think Ramondre Stevenson could be a big part of this.
Well, it's interesting you say that because Ivan Fears said this week that he thought Ramondre Stevenson looked a little tentative early on in that game, really focusing on not fumbling the ball as opposed to running his style. The other thing I like for Ramondre Stevenson this week is Dallas is without at least one of their top pass rushers in Lawrence, and then Randy Gregory is currently on the injury report. He's questionable. So, you know, they're down two of their top three pass rushers. That kind of helps get Stevenson in the game because there's less you have to worry about from a pass protection point of view.
Alex, the offensive line, the makeshift offensive line, was actually pretty good in Houston last week, but still some issues up front. Now, you know, I mean, you look at Dallas, the way that they're playing, and I know you speak of some of the defensive players that are out for Dallas, but it feels like they might be better served to take advantage of certain issues up front. How do you feel about the offensive line holding up tomorrow?
I feel good based off what we saw last week, and it's a completely different puzzle you got to solve, that Texans front and this Cowboys front. But they are banged up, and I think that there was better communication last week, and that's sort of, you know, the opponent doesn't matter. You're communicating how you're communicating. It doesn't matter what kind of talent's on the other side of the field. I don't know why that group communicated better. It's kind of weird because they've never really played together, but that was one of their biggest problems through the first 4 weeks was just the lack of communication up front. So I don't know whether it's just David Andrews taking on a larger role without other veterans being in there, whether it was just a guy, you know, and like James Ferentz, who's been in the system for so long. But if they can communicate like they did last week, I think they'll be okay. It's not going to be amazing. It's not going to be peak Dante Scarnecchia era offensive line play, but I feel cautiously optimistic about this group, especially if Justin Herron plays. If he's out, then it's a little more shaky. But if they have him in and then they get Michael Onwenu back, I think they'll be okay.
What do you think the alignment is there? And as you mentioned Onwenu, you know, is he at guard or do they kick him out to tackle here because you're not really sure, can Justin Herron go and you don't have Isaiah Wynn? Do they kick Onwenu out to right tackle and maybe Yadni Kajust has to play left tackle?
So I think ideally, if they have it their way, if Herron plays, you go Herron, Onwenu, Andrews, or sorry, Herron, Karras, Andrews, Onwenu, Kajust. Yeah, but if Herron doesn't go, I think you're right. I think you have to talk about moving Kajust over to left side and putting Onwenu in a tackle. Because, again, it's just about getting the five best guys on the field, and that's the way you do that. Putting Ysir Durant out there, we saw what he did the first couple weeks. He's still not totally in tune with things, and I think they're better off having Onwenu at tackle.
I can't believe I'm going to talk kickers with you here, but Nick Folk has been such a huge part of this team.
He's the second best player on the team.
I mean, for the second straight year, too. Alex, so I see they work out another kicker this week, Riley Patterson. Nick Folk has been on the injury report here the last few weeks. What's going on there? Is he going to be able to make it through the season?
You know what? It's an interesting one for me because I thought during the draft they really liked Patterson. He was at the Senior Bowl. He comes from Memphis, same school as Stephen Gostkowski. Very accurate from that intermediate range. He just checked a lot of the boxes for them. I was actually a little surprised when they didn't sign him and they signed Quinn Nordine instead. So on one hand, I do think that they're just kind of, in case Folk's knee gets worse, they're making sure that they're okay. But on the other hand, I wonder if this is kind of, you know, get him on the practice squad and have him here for next year kind of thing. And maybe they see him not as the kicker this year, but a potential kicker of the future. And they just want to, you know, keep a close eye on him and maybe get him in the building at some point and then make him a bigger part of the picture next year.
Yeah, I mean, look, Nick Folk's a big part of what they do offensively. I mean, you know, I know we joked about it last year, but it was sort of true with Jake Bailey was the best player on the team. He was the team MVP. This year, I think Judon's the team MVP. But if you're looking at number two, I think it has to be Nick Folk. He's second in the league in points with 48. The only one ahead of him is Tyler Bass, and that's because Buffalo scores a ton of touchdowns and he kicks a ton of extra points. Folk has made 14 of 15. I think we all know what the only miss was, which was a huge ask. And he's perfect under 50 yards so far this year. So he's been a big part of what they've done offensively. I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon, but obviously AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. They definitely need him. And I guess that's all a segue to, Alex, how do the Patriots start scoring more touchdowns here? I had this stat yesterday on Felgram as they're 31st out of 32 teams in touchdowns per game at 1.6. You know, what do they need to do to get the ball into the end zone? Because even last week against Houston, and I know Damian Harris fumbled at the goal line, there's still not enough cashing in on these drives.
So entering last week, and I'm going to throw last week's game out because it's an anomaly because the Texans are so bad and it's banged up offensive line. Entering last week, they were one of the best third down teams in the league, but they had run the fewest plays or among the fewest plays inside the 10-yard line in the NFL. So what does that tell you? They can get across the 50, but it's between the 50 and the 10 where things are dying out. It, specifically, if you narrow it down a little more, it's that high red zone area. It's the 15 to the 25, 30, 32-yard line that they just were stalling out. They weren't able to pick up yards in that spot of the field, and it was killing their drives. That's a prime area on the field for the tight ends. So I think using the tight ends more as they start to use the tight ends more, especially in that part of the field, will help them because when they've gotten inside the 10, outside of that one fumble against Houston, they've been excellent. So it's just that it's bridging that gap. It's getting from into field goal range to into the red zone to inside the 10. They just got to be better in that area of the field. And again, it's using the tight ends more. I think some of it's the play calling. That's where they've been very heavy on those screens and shotgun draws. I think getting more creative in that part of the field. Once they figure it out there, their low red zone offense, their goal line red zone offense has been good. We just don't realize it because we haven't seen a ton of it.
All right, Alex, quickly, prediction. How do you think tomorrow plays out?
I think you kind of get a higher scoring version of the Bucs game. I think it's going to be the kind of thing where the Patriots are able to dictate things enough that they're able to stay in the game. I just think they're able to score a little more because the Cowboys' pass defense, especially if Trayvon Diggs doesn't play, has been pretty bad this year. And we'll see. It might come down. It very well could come down to another long Nick Folk field goal again.
All right. Alex Barth, 98.5thesportshub.com. Some of the best Patriots coverage in the town. Check it out there, 98.5thesportshub.com. Give him a follow on Twitter, at RealAlexBarth. All right, Alex, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
And Alex, of course, joined us here on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, as do all our guests here at 98.5 The Sports Hub. All right, your thoughts on tomorrow's game. We'll get back to the Red Sox as well as they lose Game 1 of the ALCS to Houston Astros last night. All that on the table here at 617-779-0985. It's Casper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Casper and Murray. Casper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Casper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
There was a moment in time yesterday where it looked like the Patriots were going to get blown out by the Texans. They come back and win. So the question, Rex, is, are the Patriots a playoff team? Go.
Not no, but hell no.
Hell no, Rex.
Hell no. This thing, what, you just because you got a pea shooter at quarterback, give me a break right here. This team should have been beat by the Houston Texans right now. Now, a playoff team? Playoffs? No chance of this thing. They look, their defense is not as good as they've been. There's another one that should have been picked up. Hey, the ball travels down the field more than 15 yards. Uh-oh, that's bad news for this guy right here. He reminds me he's closer to Danny Warfel than he is Tom Brady.
Whoa. Watch out! Watch out!
Not Danny Warfel.
Rex Ryan on ESPN. Calling Mac Jones a pea shooter. Closer to Danny Werfel than he is Tom Brady. Oh, look out, Rex.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That's hyperbole on the other end. He's a million times better than Danny Werfel.
It's Casper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Still, though, you have really, and I'm with you on this, yes, that you have you got your backup that so many people are ready to anoint Mac Jones as the second coming. And it's just, I think it comes from, I think we agree on this, it's the thirst
the
for
quarterback.
The quarterback
thirst, baby.
Yeah, because everyone knows, you watch the league, especially now in a quarterback-driven league, and how they've, altered the NFL over the last decade plus and catered to that position. Without a quarterback, though, you're sunk. So please tell us Mac Jones is the second coming here. We have someone we can hang our hopes on for the next decade. We're going to win multiple Super Bowls with him. And he looks good. He's not the problem with this team right now.
No, but he's fine.
We don't know yet. It's too early to say, he's
great.
Well,
no, it's not. It's only too early to say if you're saying his ceiling is Derek Carr or Kirk Cousins. If you're saying you think he can be a franchise quarterback, then the fans are they're welcome. They want to hear that. So if you think he can be an elite quarterback, it's not too early. If you are saying you don't think he's going to be an elite quarterback, that he's going to be a Cousins or a Carr, the type of quarterbacks who, frankly, are perfectly capable and who the Patriots, by their own admission in the Ian O'Connor book, feel like they can win a Super Bowl with, any of the top 15 quarterbacks in the league, that people are offended by that because they spent two decades turning their nose up at those quarterbacks because they had the best of the best. And so the real question here should not be, how good is Mac Jones going to be? What's the projection? The real question should be, how good does Mac Jones have to be for the Patriots system to work? How good does Mac Jones have to be for them to approximate the level of success they had with Brady? And the organization believes he only has to be at the Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, and Kirk Cousins is better than Derek Carr. Say Derek Carr's top 15, Kirk Cousins top 10. That basically he only has to be at one of those levels for them to win. I would say the evidence on that from the organizational standpoint, very scant so far in their favor.
Yeah, and so, you mentioned something yesterday that stuck with me, and because I was definitely one of these people that, if if the Patriots ended up with someone that's Tony Romo post Brady,
yeah,
and people at the time were like, Romo's a loser, like
Romo stinks, he's a bum.
It's almost like you were quoting me because yes, at his core,
yeah,
Tony Romo is a loser. Or was. But, you know, he could get you to 10, 11 wins. That was good enough. Maybe a playoff win here
and he was
there.
Never coached by Bill Belichick.
Yeah. So now that I've seen how this has played out post-Brady, and especially after the Cam Newton experiment last year, and that's just because Cam Newton's washed up more than anything else. Like, if he was in his prime, that would have worked. But, you know, we saw how he played. Either way, how this thing has panned out post-Brady.
Yeah, I would take Romo.
Like, why wouldn't you? Like, and that's okay. Like, yeah, even though the guy never actually won a Super Bowl, but if you can get to double-digit wins year in, year out, be in the playoff conversation. Well, that's a good thing, guys. And this is ultimately what you're saying. Like, if it's Romo, if it's Dalton, who in his first 5 years made the playoffs every year and never had less than 9 wins a year.
He's a three-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah, including his rookie year.
He's just not elite. Like, he's just not going to cover every hole on your roster like the elite quarterbacks do. You're not going to be an automatic Super Bowl contender every year regardless of who's on the roster like you were with Brady or like you are with a Rodgers or a Wilson or when Breeze was playing. I mean, that's the difference. Those guys, and that's the other thing I wanted to clarify from yesterday. I'm not expecting Mac Jones to elevate the entire team. I'm just expecting him to elevate the offense. The elite quarterbacks elevate an entire team. And we'll see if he reaches that level. You know, to me, he doesn't project out to that. But look, I could be wrong. But it just elevate the offense. I mean, it's when you look at the overall offense, while he's not the problem with it, I just don't understand sort of the level of excitement / kudos / praise being thrown his way when you look at the way the offense is playing. Like, let me flip it around. If you had a quarterback who was not in a Patriots uniform and his team was 31st out of 32 teams in touchdowns per game and they were tied for 30th, when it came to scoring touchdowns on drives, 8 of 51, and was dead last in goal-to-go efficiency, would you be talking about this New York Jets, this hypothetical New York Jets quarterback, the way that Mac Jones is being talked about here?
Certainly not.
No, there's no way.
So all Chris is doing is fighting with facts. You know,
these are straight-up facts.
When you get pushed into a corner, when you push a man too far, sometimes he just has to go to the facts.
Just the facts. These are not opinions. These are just the facts of where they're at. And again, it's not all his fault. You know, I don't think he's the problem. He's not. They have bigger problems on offense. But here's the flip side of that, Jim. If you want to point to those bigger problems and say, well, hey, you're being unfair to Mac Jones, like he doesn't have any weapons, you know, this, that, and the other. Well, then don't you have to take the coach / GM to task for spending $175 million in guarantees and ending up with no weapons?
Yeah, and speaking to what you're saying, the Patriots' last 16 home games, dating back to 2019, when you know who was still here, they've scored more than 24 points twice.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So, again, it's not
a jarring stat.
Yeah, I know. It's not all on the quarterback. Yeah, that's more on Bill Belichick, the GM. So, you know, this is the only way they got to win this game tomorrow, you know, because that Dallas offense, they can put up points. So you got to keep them in the mid-20s at best.
I think you're going to have to score like 27 to win. The most you've scored is 25. You're going to have, I think, just my opinion, I think you're going to have a season high in points. You're going to have to get to 27. So maybe you can win this 27-24, 27-23, 27-20 if you're going to win. Now, look, maybe you get a defensive or a special team score. That would be great. You know, that helps out the offense a little bit.
All right, your calls on the Patriots. I see a bunch of you hanging. We'll get to those coming up next, and we'll circle back to the Red Sox at the top of the hour as well. Long commercial-free segment coming up next here, Gasper and Murray.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers, another kneel down by Brady. They cannot stop the clock. And the Buccaneers will head home with a 28-22 win.
And there's the play-by-play man at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Gene Deckerhoff. As the Tampa Bay Buccaneers improved to 5-1 with their Thursday night win on the road against the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, as the resident Brady Bobo's here, Gasper and I, we have to touch on this for just a moment. Guys, if again, I can't stress this enough, and how many times have I said it over the last calendar year? The stupidity that runs rampant through this Buccaneers team, is it's so mind-blowing, again, to me, that that team won the Super Bowl championship last year. And it really is all because of Brady. Like, they build up. Did you watch this the other night, guys? Like, again, they build up a 28-7 lead just to see the Eagles come back within 6 points with just under 6 minutes to play. How? When the Eagles had under 100 yards of offense total in the first half? Stupidity. Pure, unbridled stupidity. And penalty after penalty. My God, Chris, they're just so... I've said it a million times. I'll say it again. The organization as a whole, it's just, it's beneath Tom Brady. I don't know how he doesn't lose his mind.
I mean, what a cesspool of idiocy they are. It's like unbelievable. You know, the first Jalen Hurts rushing touchdown is on fourth down. And first of all, they don't have a spy. They kind of have a spy, but they decide it's going to be JPP. He breaks contain. He gives up contain to come inside and lets Hurts run outside and run for the touchdown. The design defensively was terrible. The execution was even worse. All he had to do was stay outside, and he might have been – he wasn't going to tackle him because Jalen Hurts is going to run right by JPP. But he might have been able to slow him down enough so that somebody else could tackle him. That was dumb. And then this 4th-and-3 call that they had from the Philly 46 with 9 minutes to go – first of all, they should have just punted it. But the actual play call – again, I need to go back and look at it. If there were 5 guys out in the route, it was 4 verticals. If there were 4 guys out, it was 3 verticals on 4th-and-3.
And it's that tight end fade that goes down to the right. If he has Gronk, he hits it. But you can't trust someone like Cameron Brate or O.J. Howard.
He tried to throw it to O.J. Howard. I mean, I thought it was a terrible throw by
Tom, it was a bad throw still, but I'm sure he feels more confident if he has Gronk there. And still, they run that play without him, and it's just not going to work. So, yeah, a lot of that is on Tom, too.
What a stupid play call. You need 3 yards. I mean,
run with Fournette.
Yes, or throw a screen, or just run, throw it to Fournette out of the backfield. Just pick up the yard. Why are you chucking it down the field? And why do we have all these vertical routes? And then, you know, Mike Evans just completely bailing on blocks, you know, running in late and trying to act like he was blocking a guy when he just didn't even get there. I'm telling you right now, man, I think Evans will last the season there, but Brady is going to get his butt traded in the offseason. He is gone.
Yeah, he is not a clean route runner. Like, it's all everything you just said. Like, that's not going to work. That match is not going to work.
Inconsistent effort, not reliable.
Yeah, and but so, you know, they're 5-1, and I'm sure some people also, you know, yelling in their car that hate Brady at this point, you know, the diaper babies are also like, don't forget about the taunting call that they benefited from. Well, what can I say? I tweeted at the time, that was a great call by the refs, and they got that one right, and if you're upset about it, what can I say? You're a baby.
You know, part of it is, go ahead.
Great teams get great calls. What
can I say? Well, I was just going to say that, and I'm sorry I interrupted you. I was just going to say, those are the calls you got for 20 years, and, you know, part of it, and yeah, I mean, look, is there a little NBA-ism when it comes to having the great quarterbacks in the remember when Brady was here and they played Baltimore and who was it who like sort of fell at his knees or whatever?
Suggs.
And he made the throw the flag motion and then they threw the flag?
Yeah.
I don't remember people complaining about that call.
John and Marblehead, though, back on the Patriots as they get ready for this big game against Dallas tomorrow. You want to talk about Trent Brown? Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I want to know what you Chris, what do you think about Brown? Do you think he's forget him for the year, or is he going to come back, or is there any way they could get any restitution for signing him?
They're not going to get any restitution.
It looks to me like he – well, so then he's a lost cause for the year, you'd say.
I mean, I wouldn't say he's a lost cause for the year, but he dealt with this in Las Vegas, this calf situation. Obviously, the Patriots traded for him. I think there's question marks. The Raiders had a question mark. I think the Patriots do as well. In terms of how much of this he can play through and how much of this he can't. And obviously he feels like he cannot. So they put him on IR. He has to miss a minimum of 3 games. This will be the 2nd game there, I believe, of that. So I don't think they're giving up on him for the season. But so far, obviously, that move doesn't look great. And this is a pre-existing injury that, for whatever reason, whether it's more physical than mental or more mental than physical, he's having a difficult time performing through.
As you mentioned, Vegas, Michael in Taunton has been hanging a while and wants to talk about the John Gruden fallout. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
Look, I know we call Bill Belichick grumpy and all, but my goodness, he's too smart to ever get in trouble for dumb things like other coaches such as Urban Meyer and John Gruden. And that's what I want to talk about today, the whole John Gruden saga. Obviously, no one's going to defend what Gruden said. No one should. I mean, what his rant sounds like something you hear at a late-night bar during a Saturday night. But, you know, at the same time, I feel like we're in a slippery slope now, because now you got people saying you may as well just reveal everyone else's personal emails. So that makes me wonder, what could possibly be in Daniel Snyder's emails or other people like Jerry Jones? What do you think could be in Jerry Jones's emails?
Michael, and thanks for holding.
Jim, what do you think is in Jerry Jones' emails?
These are the girls I had killed last year. Never speak of them again.
Look, they Gruden, with all that stuff that came out, like, he had to go. And, you know, if you're Carl Nassib, who took a personal day this week, too, you know, he comes out and you have everything that John Gruden had said about gay players and everything, like, that's got to be like, oh, I mean, I was playing for this guy and I'm putting my body on the line for
this
a-hole.
Trusted this guy.
Yeah. So, like, when all that comes out, you know, he had to go. But that the league now is like, well, nothing else to see here, guys. Like, we've gone through the rest of the emails. That is so absurd. So,
have you seen some of the Jeff Pasch emails?
Yeah.
Like you know, the ones that are denigrating Latinx folks and talking about when they build the wall and all this other. I mean, it's bad.
But
I mean,
so what? We're supposed to buy that? Like, sure, nothing else to see here. I would like to know, though, not that we'll ever get to the bottom of this. Maybe you have a theory, Chris. Like, clearly someone had it out for John Gruden. Like, why? Like, what happened there?
So you want to know my theory? And I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. You know what my theory is? And in a way, I think this is good. But, I mean, one of the few executives in the league, high-ranking of color, is Troy Vincent. And I'm not saying he's the leak, but I'm also not saying that I wouldn't be, you know, I would not be surprised if he were the leak. Because that stuff with D'Amore Smith, I mean, that would be personally offensive to Troy Vincent. There have been stories I've read where he's been in some of these meetings and, you know, like when Bob McNair was alive and made that comment about, you know, we're letting the inmates. Right, yeah. I think Troy Vincent was highly offended by that. And so I wonder if some of this stuff is leaking out from him or people close to him because they feel like it needs to see the light of day and people need to understand sort of what high-ranking minorities in the league are dealing with when it comes to the attitudes of owners, GMs, coaches, and even people in the NFL office.
Yeah, there's something's up there. I, you know, my theory too is maybe it's, you know, because some of the emails and some of the things that John Gruden said specifically about Roger Goodell, maybe when Goodell saw that, that's when he ordered the code red.
Too.
You know, he's like, oh, he's going to call me that? F him.
I can see that.
But it does feel like...
But I don't think Goodell would put the Jeff Pasch emails out.
Right, yeah. So, but yeah, oh yeah, no. So to the caller's point, do you think Dan Snyder's emails are clean? Or
oh, God, no.
Jerry Jones, make sure that I get all of the Johnny Blue on, and I never want to pay a dime for it. Let's just say I'll give you a couple of cheerleaders in exchange for 19 cases of your finest Johnny Blue. Like, who knows what the hell evil these guys are up to?
I really wish that we could, you know, much like you, even though you guys ambushed me with the real Gene Deckerhoff, I wish we could get the real Jerry Jones on.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure he wouldn't think very highly of the impersonation and how I, you know, think of him as just an evil, slithering snake of a human being or anything like that. But
he's kind of like the Hugh Hefner of the NFL, though.
He kind of is. And I also think you kind of need someone like him. If you're going to be a billion-dollar business, you got to have some filth. And, boy, there's no one filthier than Jerry Jones.
You know what bothers the folks over at Gillette is Jerry Jones in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Robert Kraft is not.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, I could see how that could go up.
That's
there.
A source of their rivalry.
Caboose sideways. Well, either way, you get Cowboys in town tomorrow with Jerry Jones. I would imagine. At Gillette Stadium, the 4:25 kickoff. You want to continue to weigh in on that game. Your thoughts on it, 617-779-0985. And we'll get to your calls on the Patriots after the headlines. We do have to circle back and talk about the Red Sox and their loss last night to Houston in Game 1 of the ALCS and some lineup changes for Game 2 this afternoon with Nathan Eovaldi on the mound. All that in the final hour. Gaspar Murray next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.